Next on NPR's From the Top.
I was wrong, and my parents were right.
It's the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. And today, from the Gene B. McCoy Community Center for the Arts in New Albany, Ohio, our lineup of outstanding musicians includes an 18-year-old pianist playing the famous opening movement of Beethoven's Waldstein Sonata, a teenage violinist from Boston playing Vinyovsky, and, as you just heard, an 18-year-old soprano brave enough to admit when her parents are right. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. Here's our host, renowned concert pianist Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, and welcome. The Village of New Albany is a beautiful new planned community just northeast of Columbus, Ohio, and we're thrilled to have been brought here by the McCoy Center for the Arts to help celebrate the opening season of this gorgeous theater. Teens and parents, could any relationship be more unstable, more fraught with tension? In today's show, we have stories of relationships between teenagers and their parents. Well, actually between teenagers, their parents, and their music. There may be a few lessons to learn, but I'm not promising anything, except maybe a few laughs or a few groans of recognition, perhaps. But we're gonna hear some terrific music first. Please welcome our first performer, an 18-year-old pianist from Marina Del Rey, California, Nicholas King. Nick, first of all, Marina Del Rey, California, there you are on the Pacific Ocean. You know, how do you get any practicing done?
Actually, my piano's in my bedroom, so no ocean for me.
So facing away from the ocean.
Yeah.
No sound of the surf to go with Beethoven. Very good. I was going to wonder how you got anything done ever. And a lot of work goes into playing this first piece, one of Beethoven's most well-loved sonatas. Tell everybody what you're going to play.
The Beethoven Waldstein Sonata, the first movement.
All right. When you're ready, you can take it from the top.
Thank you.
Nicholas King, 18-year-old pianist from Marina Del Rey, California, playing the opening movement of Beethoven's Waldstein Sonata. Nicholas, bravo. You really put the brio into that Allegro con brio. I mentioned before we were going to be talking tonight about parents and kids.
Right.
And you have really the most random story about you and your dad and how you all conspired to start piano. How did that happen?
Well, my dad was on the way to buy a Nintendo, actually. And he got lost. So being lost, driving around to find a place to buy this video game, he found a piano store. And with his logic, you know, if I'm going to be doing anything worthwhile at three, I should be doing something productive. So the video game got scratched, and I got a piano instead.
And were you crestfallen by this state of development, or did you think this machine was sort of fascinating? Or
I honestly don't remember.
Seeing it. He just brought it home. And so you just started playing, and how did lessons begin?
We actually found the teacher that I had for 7 years in the paper, the only time she ever posted an ad in the paper.
Wow.
And so it was just completely a coincidence.
I never realized Craigslist was the source of great recommendations for piano pedagogy, but talk about a random set of decisions. Actually, something very unrandom, very honorable, playing the piano and raising $30,000 for LA Children's Hospital. How did you decide to do that?
Well, my dad and I were at the supermarket, and one night we were buying some food. I think it was about 5 days before Christmas, and there was a beautiful white baby grand piano out in the fruit section. Mm-hmm. And
appropriately enough.
Right. Yeah. Now, when I tell the story, I like to give credit to myself, saying that, you know, I went and I played piano, but I didn't. My dad said, why don't you go play? To which I replied, no. But his rationale was that if he paid for 4 years of piano lessons, then I should be able to play piano.
Dad says you can go play, you should go play.
So I went and I played.
Yeah.
And I made about $8 that night, you know, just jingle bells and whatnot.
Great.
But about a week beforehand, I had been watching Wheel of Fortune with my grandma, her favorite show. Mm. And it was a special Wheel of Fortune. All the celebrities, I mean, it was only celebrities, and all the money that they won, they sent to the organization of their choice.
Right.
And one of them was Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. And I'd never heard of it, and I had the idea that if a kid was checked into the hospital, that they wouldn't be released until the bills were paid, that the hospital would just hold the kid.
or just use them in research or whatever they do, you know.
And everybody knows Santa can't go into hospitals. I mean, it's too bright. They don't turn off the lights there. It's horrible. So that's how it started.
Santa has to have a hazmat suit on to get
exactly.
to the children's hospital.
I mean, reindeers aren't kosher.
So you wanted to rescue the kids.
Right. Right. So 5 days before Christmas, I went there and I played every day for a couple of hours. And that year I raised about $1,500. And then I decided I would do it again the next year. Mm-hmm. So I went to a mall. I had a piano donated because I gathered a little bit of press from the year before. And, you know, that year my goal was $10,000. I only made about $8,000, $9,000. But somebody had seen me there who knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody's cousin that worked at Rosie O'Donnell's show.
Oh, right.
And I was flown out and I was on the show and they fronted the next $1,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you know, so Rosie made up the difference and you made your goal that year and my gosh, $30,000 for LA Children's Hospital. That's great. But this isn't the only way that you've been an entrepreneur. Can we talk donuts for a second?
Sure. Sure. I'm currently homeschooled, but the old high school that I went to had about 4,000 kids in it. All right. That's a lot of people, all right? Meaning that's a lot of birthdays.
Right.
And birthdays equal donuts. All right. So
it's festive, sort of bringing donuts to school. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'd always see people walking around with donut boxes, and everybody loves donuts. So one day I was bringing a box to my friend, and about 30 people, you know, just randomly asked me for one. So I figured, why don't I sell them? So I started selling donuts.
But is that frowned upon at your school? Or
well,
is
I mean, it's illegal.
Okay?
You can't sell things on school campus. I mean,
that's right.
You have to give a profit to the school, and I really wasn't willing to do that. So there's a little bit of tact that had to go into it.
First of all, donuts is not some sort of street slang for some kind of new designer
no,
drug.
No, we're talking the bread with the sugar.
Really, the real bread?
Yeah.
And, okay,
yeah.
Fine. I just wanted to, before we proceeded any further. So obviously, it's illegal to sell the donuts
right.
on the school campus. And mm-hmm. so, you know, who was the first person who called you to task for this?
Well, at first it was the security guards. But then they got free donuts. I mean,
free donuts.
They're overworked. They have 4,000 kids to take care of. Who doesn't want a hot donut in the morning, really?
That's right.
The next person was the principal. Because, I mean, I was selling about 6 dozen a day, pulling in about 400 a week. And it was just a little out of control. I mean, the seat next to me in class wasn't for a person, it was for my donuts. And some of the teachers were complaining. I mean, there were rumors about mice and whatnot, but, you know, that of course wasn't because of me. So the principal called me into his office and he said, listen, Nick, we can't have this anymore. It's just unacceptable. So I asked him what his favorite donut was. And he said a chocolate eclair. And from then on, I put a chocolate eclair on his desk every morning. And I never heard another word from the
principal. That's right. That's right. And he gives you any trouble, he wakes up with a chocolate eclair on his pillow.
Yeah, there you
go. You know?
I mean,
it'd be a shame if something happened to your Corolla, Mr. Principal. So, yeah, you don't have to sell us donuts, however, Nick, to get some cash out of us. You are getting one of those $10,000 scholarships from our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists Fund. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any plans on what you think you might do with the money?
I'm
don't
actually...
say seed money for more donuts, please.
Besides that?
Though, yeah.
I've been accepted to the Eastman School of Music, and that's where I'll be attending next fall. Thank you. So some of that money will go to that. Some of it will go to the Banff Summer Music Festival that I've been accepted to. And the rest will go to donuts.
Well, we expect great, great things from you as the wonderful pianist that you are. And we're privileged to get to hear you today.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us, Nick.
Thank you.
All the best. Nicholas King, 18-year-old pianist, a gifted young man from California.
Listen to From the Top episodes on demand at fromthetop.npr.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jackkentcookfoundation.org, and that's Cook with an E. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our second performer is an 18-year-old violinist from Milton, Massachusetts. That's just outside of Boston. Please welcome Pippa Jarvis. Pippa, welcome. Pippa is short for?
Philippa, actually.
Not for Pipsqueak.
No.
although you took that rather good-naturedly, so I'm imagining Pipsqueak is a nickname that you've grown up with.
It's one of the nicknames. One of my many nicknames. Yeah, I at summer camp, I play soccer with my friends, and you get the moments head-on collisions, and you just... I just tend to squeak sometimes, so I've gotten that nickname because of that.
That would be so much nicer if you heard on ESPN after a big, you know, a big play, a big tackle, you know, you all of a sudden hear this squeaking.
Yeah.
You know? I love your name, Philippa.
Thank you.
Pippa. And you love this piece we're going to play. Tell everybody what it is.
I do. It's called Obertas by Wieniawski. It's a mazurka, which is a type of Polish dance. And it's very uplifting.
It's a very effective piece.
Yeah.
You actually got a wonderful reaction from your high school where you played this.
Yeah, I have a funny story. I played this piece in my high school, I think grade 9, and my band, the band had just played right before, so the audience was pretty hyper and wound up. And so I played, and there's a pause, and the audience started to clap, but it wasn't over. And then I also heard, I think she was on my lacrosse team, actually. She yelled, "You go, girl!" Which you don't really do in a concert. But
I don't know. I think the precedent is set. I think, audience, you're going to be expected to at least lay down one "you go, girl." So, Pippa, when you're ready, we will take it from the top.
Great.
Go, girl. Pippa Jarvis, 18-year-old violinist from Milton, Massachusetts, playing Wieniawski. That was so characterful and flavorful and free and always kept me on my toes, always something really just so much in the style and so much fun to play with you. Hey, Pippa, what's your favorite place to practice in the whole world?
I really like nature. I really like to play in nature. My family owns a cottage on the Thousand Islands in Canada, actually. And my room is in the boathouse, which is right above the water. You can actually hear the waves hitting the wooden boards. It's pretty nice. And my favorite place is basically to practice on the dock of the boathouse, literally a foot away from the water. And it's great to play, make music in such a beautiful area.
It's very still there, but you're basically on the St. Lawrence River, so you're actually watching really huge ships go by.
Yeah, great big ocean liners actually go into the ocean.
So your family is from Canada initially?
Yep. Originally from Ottawa, and we moved to Boston about 12 years ago.
Yeah, you've really become, as a family, quite a major musical force in the city of Boston.
Yes.
What does your dad do?
My dad is the concertmaster of Symphony by the Sea Orchestra, and they play in Marblehead. Mm-hmm. And he also conducts 3 out of 7 orchestras at the New England Conservatory Prep School. Yeah. And he also sells instruments, violins, at Rooney & Sons Violin in Boston.
It's a very famous shop in Boston. Oh, so, and how about your mom?
My mom is also a violin teacher at NEC Prep School.
And your brother plays the violin too?
No. He plays the cello.
Rebellious type.
Yeah. Enough violins.
I am intrigued, though, with all this violin playing in one family and by the fact that you practically have a key to one of the best string shops in the country. So we sent 16-year-old roving reporter Emily Mayer off with you to find out more. Let's pick you two up as you get off the elevator that opens up into the shop.
Wow, this place must be heaven for a violinist. I mean, there's violins, and there's bows, and there's like a whole room full of cellos.
Down in the back is actually where they repair all the violins. So we have about six workers who do the soundboard suggesting, do the varnishing, take the violin apart, put it back together. It's pretty cool to see the shop with tools all over.
Do any famous violinists come here?
Oh, yeah. My dad actually works with a famous violinist. Hilary Hahn comes in here quite often. My dad sold her violin to her. And Jeff Thayer also came in here. I had a lesson with him in the cello room, which was really fun. And Yo-Yo Ma is another big customer of my dad, who comes in here a lot.
Now, you're actually the proud owner of a new, well, really old violin, aren't you?
I am. I just recently got a 1798 Italian violin. It's a Palazzo made in Perugia. And there's kind of a funny story behind it. My grandmother bought the violin for me. So I've been, she's in Ottawa. She lives in Ottawa. So I've been going up there trying instruments for her since she has to have a say in the instrument since it's her money.
Did you get any sort of special deal on it?
I did. I did get a discount. And I also get special attention when something goes wrong. I can always complain, Daddy.
Is your dad here right now?
He is. He's actually in the other room trying a couple violins, playing some Bach.
Can we meet him?
Definitely. Hi, Dad.
Hey, sweetheart. How are you doing?
Good. This is Emily.
Hi, Emily.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
What were you just playing?
Oh, I was just playing some Bach. I'm trying out some fiddles. I have to play a couple of Brandenburg concertos in a couple of weeks, so we're just choosing the right instrument. Got it. A Strad over there, a Guarneri there, and this is a Strad too.
Sounds beautiful.
Oh, I'm lucky.
My dad actually sounds really good on the really nice instruments.
Thank you.
Mr. Jarvis, does Pippa ever give you tips about some big solo you're working on?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of funny. Well, I do play something that I've got to put out there for her, and she'll listen. She's very good. And then I find that she says stuff that I've told her.
Yeah.
She always apologizes. She's very sweet. She says, Dad, I'm sorry, but, if you would just flat hair or it's stuff that, oh, yeah, that's what I said.
But you do love practicing with your dad, don't you?
I do. He's actually my practice partner. I really, really respect what he has to tell me. And sometimes he says, Pippa, this is the third time I'm telling you. But I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, right, Dad. But it helps. And it's really nice to have such a supporter. It's a strong person who can support you, totally knows you inside out, and just wants you to do your best.
And you two are really close outside of music, too.
Mm-hmm. We do a lot of things together. We kayak together on the St. Lawrence River. We go skiing every winter whenever we can get away from our busy life. And we also run together, even though I'm not as good as my dad. He's, six marathons now?
Yeah,
I think?
Yeah.
His third Boston marathon will be next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. But actually, every Thursday night, my dad takes the train out to Natick, since I go to school in Natick, and he and his running partner run back to Boston, actually here to the shop, from Natick, which is, 19 miles or so?
Yeah, 19 miles.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's every Thursday, and I meet my dad at the train station, and I run with him, usually to about Wellesley, and that's when I start to fade, and he can take his own path, but it's nice, after my classes, I get to run downtown and run with my dad a bit and see him during the week, which I never get to.
It must be wonderful to be so close with your dad.
It is. It really is. I'm pretty lucky.
Now, there's one last thing I was kind of curious about. What's the most valuable instrument in the shop right now?
Oh, let's see. Well, there's a couple of nice ones for sure, but I guess that one over there, that's a 1734 Strad. If you wrote me a check for $3.5 million, you could take it home.
I'll be careful not to touch anything. Well, Pippa, Mr. Jarvis, thanks so much for showing me the shop.
My pleasure.
Thanks
for coming.
So you do a lot with your dad. So your dad's running the Boston Marathon? How's the training going?
You can always tell when it's marathon season because conversations with him on the phone are pretty short and to the point. He gets pretty edgy, but he's
more carbs, Dad. More carbs.
Yeah.
Load up on those carbs. Yeah. Now, tell the truth. I mean, all these great violins in the shop. I mean, I love your violin, by
Thank
the way.
You.
I love the old Italians. And it's got a great sound to it. I hate when people say that. It's not, if you hold the violin up, it won't make a sound. It's her making the sound, okay? But anyway, tell the truth. Have you ever had a big audition coming up or a competition or a big concert and kind of sneak into the shop? I mean, you've got a key, right? Just like grab one of the Strads or the Amati or something like that and take it home for the audition. And
well, I actually, not going to lie, I do that. But I...
Does your dad know about it?
He has to know. Oh. I don't know the code to the safe.
Oh, okay. So he's in on it.
So he has to at least open the door. Mm-hmm. But I played in a competition at NEC about 2 years ago. And after rehearsal on Saturday, my dad and I drove to the shop, picked up a Strad. I played on it until about 1 a.m, just so I could get used to the feel. Yeah. Got some sleep and then played the competition Sunday morning and drove the violin back to the shop Sunday afternoon. But I have done that.
Have you kept the secret from your colleagues? Did they know you were playing on a Strad? Or?
No, I want to keep my friends.
That's right. Well, secret's out, Pippa.
Yeah, thanks.
Beautiful playing.
Good.
Secret's out here, too. Great Vinyovsky and great
Thank
being with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Pippa Jarvis, 18 years old, from Milton, Massachusetts. And now our first Ohioan and music of spring. Please welcome our Primavera soprano from Cincinnati, 18-year-old Julia Mendelson. Julia, welcome.
Thank you.
Mendelson isn't too musical a name, is it?
No, not really.
Yeah. Hey, while I head back to the piano, why don't you tell everybody about this piece?
All right. I will be singing Spring by Dominic Argento, and it is from the Elizabethan song cycle. And it is a song about spring, which is kind of obvious, but it's basically just about all of the wonderful things that people do when the season first starts.
Spring, the sweet spring, is the year's pleasant king. Then blooms each thing, then maids dance in a ring. Cold doth not sting the pretty birds to sing. Cuckoo, jug, jug, bully, tweet away. Ooh.
Julia Mendelson, 18-year-old soprano from Cincinnati, Ohio, singing Spring by Dominic Argento. It's such a lovely piece. It reminds me a little bit of Stravinsky, and Dominic Argento just writes such great music, and it feels like it's perfect for your voice.
Yes.
It's just, oh gosh, you really belt it out. It's wonderful. Just gorgeous. Just gorgeous.
Thank you.
Julia, before we proceed, Joanne has a short announcement.
Okay.
The following segment of From the Top has been designed to give enormous pleasure to the parents in our audience, but it may provoke violent feelings of resentment in their teenage children. Please advise your adolescent children to go heat up a frozen pizza in the kitchen or do something else safely out of listening range. Also, please check their internet history to make sure that no podcasts of the following material have been downloaded. Thank you.
Thanks, Joanne, for that very important message. Okay, Julia, here we go. Okay. You didn't want to take singing lessons as a little kid, did you?
No, I didn't. Actually, I was playing soccer when I was little, and one of my friends was doing a lot of theater, so I kind of decided, why not? I'll try it. And I did like it. So I was in one of the musicals when I was like 9 or 10, and I had one solo line, and I sang it, and afterwards, my parents were like, oh, Julia, you have a wonderful voice. You need to sing. You need to take voice lessons. And I was like, no, I don't want to. So they just kept bugging me. They wouldn't stop. Every day, they would just be like, Julia, come on, let's take voice lessons. Woo! And I'd just be like, no, 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 I don't want to. And finally, they got my sisters in on it. And so I said, fine, fine, I'll take it. And I did. And I have been taking them ever since, and of course,
the rest
I
is
love
history
singing.
In the making. Yeah. Here we are. And so, come on, say it.
I was wrong, and my parents were right.
Julia, I know how painful that must be.
It was. It was very painful.
I can feel your pain.
Thank you.
Then, years later, when your parents were trying to expand your horizons, I guess you started out at Interlaken, and
yes.
what was on the horizon for you at that point?
Well, I was at Interlaken Arts Camp for about 5 years, and then I decided...
And loving it there, I guess.
Yes, yeah. I loved it. And I decided it was time for change, so I auditioned at a few summer schools, and I got into Tanglewood, and of course my parents were ecstatic, and I was just like, yeah, okay. And I said, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll go there, I'm not sure. And they said, no, you are going there. They said, yes, we're so excited you're going. And I was like, no, I haven't decided. So they kept, you know, pushing, and I went, of course, and I absolutely loved it. It was amazing.
And so...
I was wrong, and my parents were right.
All right, enough of that. Actually, when we told you about this little gag, you warned us that it might reinforce your mother's worst habits.
Yes, I did. And of course I was right, because...
You're right for a change.
Of course
nice.
I was right.
So good, yeah.
But my mom, I knew she would say this, that she would say, you know, looking back on everything, all the times I told you to practice, I told you to study, and I told you to do your homework, you know, now it's all paid off, and, you know, you're going to thank me. And, of course, after I told her about this, she said the same exact words.
That's so, right.
Yeah.
Your parents are right sometimes, but you're the one out there doing the good work, and
yeah.
It's really paying off. It's great to hear you, Julia.
Thank
great
you.
Being with you. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Julia Mendelson, 18-year-old soprano from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Welcome back to the radio showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, From the Top. This week we're broadcasting from the Gene B. McCoy Community Center for the Arts in New Albany, Ohio. Coming up, a teenage string trio from here in Ohio performs an inspired and jazzy composition based on a famous Negro spiritual. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Today's show in New Albany is made possible with support from the McCoy Center for the Arts and the New Albany Community Foundation. Special thanks this week to WOSU Public Media. Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.npr.org. Each year, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation present 25 performers of exceptional musical ability, outstanding academic potential, and financial need with the $10,000 Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award. Learn more at fromthetop.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Well, it's all string-playing kids from Ohio now, and we're going to start off with the string instrument we hear least often on the show, the double bass. Please welcome a fantastic 16-year-old bassist from neighboring Columbus, Ohio, Nathaniel West. Welcome, Nate. I can call you Nate?
Yeah.
Good enough. Tell our audience what you and I are going to play together.
We're going to be playing the second movement of Frank Proto's A Carmen Fantasy.
So I guess based on the opera Carmen.
Yeah, based on the opera Carmen.
And your teacher had some really good advice about playing this piece.
Yeah. A couple years ago when I was at the Brevard Music Center, one of my teachers, Mr. Brown, had some pretty good advice for me on this piece. I just started working on it, so I was playing it really fast because I didn't have a very good idea of what the tempo was supposed to be. And so the first thing he says to me is, Nate, have you ever seen this opera? Carmen is sexy. She's not someone you would want to run away from. So
you slow down and take your time and put the rose in your teeth, and I think we're ready to go here.
Thank you.
Nate West, 16-year-old double bassist from Columbus, Ohio, playing Frank Proto's Carmen Fantasy. Nate, I think we can all agree that was sexy.
Thank
if you don't mind my saying so.
I don't mind.
Pretty great. It's just virtuoso stuff, man.
Thanks.
Really superb. Nate, I understand you're a big sports fan.
I am.
And living in Columbus it might hurt a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
who are your favorite teams?
Ohio State for anything in college, football, basketball. Mm-hmm. Cleveland Cavaliers for pro basketball, and Chicago Bears for pro football.
Wow.
Last year wasn't a good year.
No, not a good year. I mean, is that painful? I mean, did you enjoy the game? They all made championships, those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the Cavaliers were the last one, and by that time I had given up hope.
Yeah.
So.
But a lot of these guys, you know, started pretty strong in the championship games.
Ohio State, you know, returned the opening kickoff for a touchdown.
Right.
I felt good after that.
Yeah.
And then the Bears did the same thing, and they were doomed.
And they both crashed and burned.
Yeah.
Well, at least you have the solace of music.
Yeah.
Thank goodness, Nate. Actually, as a double bassist, a guy who normally plays the big accompanying notes in the back of the orchestra, holding up the whole thing from the bottom up, you actually won the concerto competition at the Interlochen Arts Camp this past summer. That's great. I mean, you were competing against not only other bass players, I imagine, but everybody, violins, flute players.
Yeah, violins, violas, I think every instrument, including like saxophone,
So you were pretty surprised. I mean, you were the naysayer even before the competition.
Yeah, going into it, you know, even if I played well, which I was sure I wouldn't play better than any of the other kids, but even if I did, would want to hear a bass player, you know?
Yeah.
On a concerto.
I think we could stand hearing a bass player once in a while if it's played like that, yeah.
But actually, once the competition was over, you know, I was pretty sure I wasn't going to win, but I was still nervous about finding the results. And so one day, well, I guess I had told my cabin mates earlier that week, because it was the first week of camp, when I was introducing myself, you know, that I had got an Emerson scholarship, so I got to go there for free, and you know, I was the principal bass of the orchestra there, and so I guess they all had this impression that I was good or something, and so, like, I was waiting in line for dinner a couple days after the competition, and one of my cabin mates just comes up to me, he's like, "Can you stop being good for 1 second?" And I'm like, "Quentin, what are you talking about?" And he goes, "You won," and I'm like, "What did I win, Quentin?" And so, you know, he goes, "You won the concerto competition." And so, you know, I was happy, but I didn't really want to believe him. So I looked over at the bulletin board where it was posted, and I saw, you know, number one, Matt Vera, who was the other winner, and number two, myself. Mm-hmm. And so for about a week, I also thought that I got second place.
Yeah, no, but two winners.
There are actually two winners every year.
Yeah.
And I didn't find that until a week later.
So we're always... always talking yourself down, man. No,
yeah.
There you are. There you are, up at the top. Now, it's not just playing solo or playing, you know, leading the section in the orchestra for you, Nate. You're into chamber music big time. And as we've been talking, the other two members of your string trio have crept up to the microphones. They're both 17. Eric Gratz, the group's violinist, is from the Cleveland area, and violist Stephanie Price is from right here in Columbus. Collectively, these three make up the Reisiger Trio. Eric, Stephanie, welcome. Good to have you with us. So here I've been talking with Nate, and I've avoided the biggest issue in his life, his identity crisis. What am I talking about, Eric?
Well, I think Nate wants to be a violinist.
I'd say so. Because he's not just playing these, you know, these low notes. He's playing up in the stratosphere on the bass all the time.
But there's some evidence that he wants to be a violinist. His Facebook profile pictures him playing a violin. And also, you know, once in a while when we're, you know, rehearsing and we're tired and take a break, we'll get out the Guitar Hero. And the funny thing is, like, I just see, like, irony in this, like, big time here. You would think that a bass player, you know, most bass players are really comfortable with, you know, guitars. Well, not most, you know, but quite a few.
The natural sort of physical relationship with the instrument is more
just
like a guitar.
Lies the same, you know, and so you'd see a lot of them, you know, you'd think he'd be really good at it.
Yeah.
He holds it like a violin.
Stephanie, does that improve his... Is he really good?
It doubles the score. But we're still better than him.
Yeah, I'm still really bad.
Yeah, the score is horrible.
It's easier under the chin. Yeah. Don't put that double bass under your chin.
I think I tried once.
It's really good. Eric, the name Reisiger has something to do with the fact that you live in Cleveland and Stephanie and Nate live in Columbus. What is Reisiger?
Reisiger is traveler in Dutch. So obviously,
there you go. Traveling, doesn't need much explanation there. And get your coachings together, yeah.
Yeah, it's nice though, because I don't really have to travel. They do the traveling, so I just have to get there from my house. You know, it's not...
So the mountain comes from Muhammad, I guess. That's nice. I know you three played the piece we're about to hear this morning for some kids at the high school here, so you're all warmed up. Stephanie, tell us what the piece is.
We'll be playing Midnight Child by Charles Washington, and... It's actually based off of a Negro spiritual called Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child. So you'll be hearing that throughout the piece a lot.
And variations thereof. I mean, there's a lot of jazz influence in this piece, including the fact that all three of you take solos during the course of the piece. The composer actually encourages the players to write their own solo passages, like improvisation and jazz. Nate took him up on that, but Stephanie, you found his solo kind of funny in a way.
Well, he basically came to me and was like, Stephanie, I wrote a solo I can't play. And I was like, why would you write a solo you can't play? And
I just wrote a new one.
Just harder or easier?
A little bit harder.
A little bit.
So lots of notes, but relaxed the whole time, I'm imagining.
Yeah. I still can't play it.
Well, can't wait to hear it and all of the solos. It is a wonderful, wonderful piece, so take the stage. I want to thank all of our great young performers today and thank you for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And Reisiger Trio, you can take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. Musical direction by Tom Vinieri, with Caroline Cardias-Manos. Our tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with Dan Hallis and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear on our program, visit fromthetop.org.